Well, we're wrapping up this morning with Bill Resnick interviewing Larry Kleinman here on The Old Mole. They'll talk about Latinos organizing to stop Trumpism. Bill.
Larry Kleinman, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you, Bill. Great to be here again.
Larry Kleinman, along with many others, the principals were Cipriano Farrell and Ramon Ramirez. They co-founded PICUN, Oregon's tree planter and farm workers movement and union. They organized mostly migrant workers, such that PICUN became one of Oregon's and the nation's leading voices and service organizations and membership activation organizations for Oregon farm workers. They are a union, they're a service agency, a Spanish and partly English radio station, a beautiful low-income housing subdivision around Woodburn. They fight for their members and all farm workers, including organizing work, picketing, bringing about court challenges, and forcing many farmers to accept union demands and greatly improve the conditions in their farms and factories and processing plants. Larry was the secretary treasurer at PICUN for how many years, Larry?
25 years.
25 years. Now he has new work. Tell us about it. He's still working with PICUN as an advisor, but he's also working nationally.
Right, and listeners might remember that 3 years ago, I stepped down as part of a planned generation shift of leadership. My successor is Jaime Arredondo, young farm worker, farm worker family, members of PICUN, kind of grew up in the movement, and he stepped in and is now the new secretary treasurer. And I moved into national work with part of a larger movement that PICUN is a part of called the Fair Immigration Reform Movement. Three dozen, mostly state, local coalitions or membership organizations fighting for immigrant rights that's existed for about 15 years, and PICUN was one of the co-founders of that. My role in that national work now is as a senior advisor on strategy and capacity building to build the movement power, either through proactive opportunities like we had hoped to have under the Obama administration, or now that we are pivoting that capacity to defend the community against the threats of mass deportation.
You know, now is a wonderful time for the Latino community at every level, including the national level, to make alliances with so many other groups that are in different ways, but similarly and powerfully under attack. I know they're thinking about that in Washington and everywhere. And Black Lives Matter, for example, there's discussions amongst the leadership and the people for some kind of really larger struggle. Tell us about that.
That's right. And I think that so my work is mostly based in Washington, but I intersect with leaders from all over the country, local leaders, and also national leaders in other immigrant rights organizations or allied groups, unions, SEIU being a prime example, and other movements. So I would say to you and to the listeners that this is not a new thing, but it has a new urgency. And it has a new moment. It's because of the crisis that's come out of this election. And we are early in that thinking of what this new reality means and calls for. But we're 10 days in as of this moment. So it's very early. And the first and understandable priority for the organizations I work with is defending the community. But it's just right out there beyond people's consciousness that there are many others similarly affected. Maybe not quite on the firing line like immigrants are or seem to be in Trump's rhetoric and his priorities, but I believe that coming together that you're describing will flourish in 2017.
And there are so many groups that can be a part of that and that are now appalled and frightened and who have large memberships or at least affiliates, people who look to them for leadership, and that can be activated, it seems to me. It's not just the people in the streets now. Some of it is good, some of it is different than what we would want. And it will strengthen. It was going to strengthen through the Trump presidency and certainly the first several hundred days. It's not clear that it couldn't become a great majority of Americans because they're taking aim at even at Social Security and Medicare now, and not just sort of the weaker, often people of color groups. Look into the future a little bit. How do you see that all coming together?
Well, first of all, I think it's going to be uneven nationally. We live here on the West Coast in a zone that, and in an area of the country that I think has a more ascendant trajectory of progressive power. And there are large chunks of this country, including many places that have a relatively newly arrived immigrant or Latino population that do not have that progressive infrastructure. They do not have a progressive political culture. In fact, there is a strong force of reaction in those places. So I think it's going to be uneven across the country. The first phase of this is, as I said a minute ago, is going to be groups taking account and coming up with the first responses of how do we defend against the initial attacks. Now, the initial attacks might not materialize, as people imagine, but we have to be ready because we cannot count on anything. We cannot count on it happening or not happening. So that's the first step that the conversations I've been in the last 7 or 8 days have reflected, understandably, in the immigrant community. That means defending DACA, the Deferred Action for Children Arrivals, the so-called DREAMers, 750,000 young immigrants who have temporary work permits, all of which could be canceled on January 20th, the day that Trump is sworn in as president. All he has to do is sign an executive order to that effect. He may not do that, but that seems to be one of the key rallying points and points of initial immediate defense that people are coming together around.
Also, the sanctuary cities struggles,
that's
it
right.
seems to me. He, mm-hmm. he has really raised the gauntlet, right,
mm-hmm.
and made a promise. I'm not sure he can implement it quickly. I'm sure there'd be court cases that went at his power. But it seems to me that's going to be an important struggle, and it's going to be an important struggle to control the police, it seems to me.
Absolutely.
The police really supported Trump strongly. He'd strongly defended them against any challenge. The police unions were powerfully on his side, and they may not want to take direction from their mayors, even in liberal cities. They have a lot of discretion. They can arrest anybody they want on the streets for whatever it is. I see that as a coming struggle all over the country, actually.
I agree with that, although I'd say that, I think there's a range.
Great variety, yes.
Yeah, and
Joe Arpaio lost his election.
Arpaio was removed
Arpaio.
And is under criminal indictment. His trial will be December 8th on criminal contempt of court. So that was very important as an affirmation of a surge of Latino voters in Arizona, 150,000 new Latino voters registered, and especially in Maricopa County. I think you're absolutely right to call out the question of police-ICE cooperation. ICE has its sort of work plan. They can carry out large-scale raids, but large-scale raids take a long time and a lot of planning and resources. So really, the ubiquitous threat to immigrants is local police forces. And what their posture is, if their posture is aggressive, if it's enforcing immigration laws, if it's channeling people over to ICE, that's an existential threat in every community. If they're not doing that, the threat is more limited, but still very powerful. So one of the early things in the Trump administration will be to see what exact consequences they can impose by executive order in terms of funding, defunding threats on cities that maintain postures of non-cooperation between ICE and local police.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Larry Kleinman, one of the co-founders who built PICCOON into an important, not just Oregon organization, protecting farm workers and especially immigrant farm workers, but a national organization that has been involved in national discussions to form united fronts amongst many Latino groups all over the country to defend the rights of immigrants and all poor people. Larry now left PICCOON, although he's still an advisor for PICCOON as part of a generational shift. There are new people now in PICCOON. Mm-hmm. Larry's working now with the Fair Immigration Reform Movement in Washington, a very large group of Latino groups.
I think while most of the member organizations affirm state coalitions and local organizations are Latino-dominated mm-hmm. and some Latino-led, there are a number of them that have a variety of ethnicities of immigrants, with Asian, Middle Eastern, African. So it's a broader spectrum.
Right. And you probably also include a lot of the liberal churches and various other groups somehow as working with them.
Absolutely.
If not official members.
That's right.
That's how it sort
right.
of
and some of the organizations in firm are coalitions that have hundreds of organizations, including support organizations like you're describing.
Right. There's going to be a flurry of horrible things at the beginning, probably, unless they're really much more clever, which I think they're going to be like on trying to destroy Medicare and Social Security. They're going to chip away at it, you know, murder it by 1,000 cuts rather than going at it frontally and just trying to privatize. Mm-hmm. They're fairly smart. That's what they're doing with public education. They've developed a real, very good campaign for destroying public education in this country. Worked much more slowly than they thought, but they've made progress. And my guess is that in a lot of areas, they will do that. In immigration, though, they really may bring down the hammer as much as they can right at the beginning, as you pointed out. But let's talk about the longer term. It's a complicated picture, but it is true that a lot of white workers have moved from supporting Obama in two elections. For example, many, many of the counties that gave Obama his victory, gave Trump his victory, formally voted for Obama twice in his runs for president. So saying it's just racism or just anti-immigrant feelings, in fact, is not a useful analysis of why so many white working class people shifted allegiances and decided that Trump was their last hope, it seems to me. At least many of them are, it seems to me, not devoted to an alternative right or even right-wing agenda. They are desperate for help, and they're desperate for jobs, it seems to me, is the way to look at it. And their lives are extremely precarious, and they're desperate for security. Larry, it seems to me, in the long run, to build a movement that can prevail over Trumpism, a lot of those people are going to have to be won over. And I think right at the beginning, we have to be thinking about that. How do you respond to that?
Well, there's no question that there's an immense amount of work to do. There's decades of wreckage and damage in immigrant communities, in African-American communities, people of color, and in working-class communities. I think listeners of The Old Mole have heard chapter and verse over the years, those who are devoted listeners, about the stories, the analysis of the underlying causes. That work goes on. It goes on in a new reality, with a new urgency, and we are left with the complicated work, as you say, of discerning where is white supremacy now manifest in America, because it is at the heart of America. Sometimes it's very obvious and crude. Other times it's very subtle. Sometimes people express their economic insecurity in racist terms and vice versa. So we can't simply surrender to its overcomplication, even though it's true. We have to find those avenues to build common cause, and I think they will be around concrete economics at the local level. There are, for example, towns in the center part of Pennsylvania that are reviving economically because of the arrival of Dominicans and Puerto Ricans, right? Now, the traditional or historic white population in some of those towns, some of them see that, a few of them, the minority, I believe, see that as a good thing. That saying our town would have died without these folks coming in. That's repeated in rural America all over the country. Iowa, Kansas, South Dakota, even parts of Oregon, I think you could describe in those terms. There are other folks, though, that either don't see opportunity for themselves or feel there is none or feel somehow dispossessed by that phenomenon. And that's, again, where white supremacy, I think, comes in as a force, even if it's not recognized by the expressor of it. So I think the day-to-day work of relationship building and realignment is really, I think, at the heart of what you're talking about as it relates to immigrant communities.
It is possible, though, to reach out much more widely than we imagine, that at least we have, to talk to those people and bring them even, I mean, you're not going to convince people right away. They don't move. That's not how politics works. One discussion in a shopping mall or in front of a Walmart, or even giving people some materials. But over time, Trumpism is going to disappoint, as you pointed out earlier in one of our discussions. Mm. Trump doesn't have a program for those people. And indeed, nor does international capital and the globalizers and the elites have programs for those people, and are not willing to give up their privileged positions in order to accommodate all of those needs, and are not ready to provide the resources that would be required to respond to global warming or to the failing of infrastructure in the United States. How can we, though? It seems to me at some point, though, we have to incorporate them within the coalition, at least win many of them over, who could be won over to a very vicious, nationalistic, racial set of forces.
Well, and sometimes when we think about this, we think about imagining what turning the tide in a given city or town or even state would look like, which then when we unpack it seems really daunting. So I would just commend the work of groups like the Rural Organizing Project, who have set themselves to this exact kind of task now for 25 years almost, starting with issues of gender identity and sexual orientation. That was the initial conversation spawned by the anti-gay lesbian ballot measures in the 90s. But I think they've made serious connections in rural Oregon and have a deep understanding of how those dynamics are actually playing out, not how we imagine they're playing out from the outside. And again, and as we see often in politics, as you say, the loudest voices often get the most attention, but they're not necessarily representative. And so the occupation that played out in Harney County is a great example, where you had a divided community. And most folks in that community were saying, we don't want you here. We don't want the alt-right here. We don't want the armed right here. We don't want the militias here. That's not who we are. That is not addressing our problems that are facing us in this community. So I think there's simply not enough investment in that work by national funders. And one larger problem we have, I think, for the organizing world and the social change world is the billionarization of philanthropy, where billionaires increasingly are providing the resources, not millionaires, not longstanding endowments that are run by professional program officers. And these billionaires fund work in a billionaire kind of way, and it overlooks entire sectors, social sectors, geographic sectors of this country. And so we end up with the disinvestment. We have an economic disinvestment in those communities, and we have a philanthropic disinvestment, and we have an organizing disinvestment, right? Which is largely about capacity, I would argue, not will or desire.
We can predict what the future is going to look like, and it's going to be a lot of defense, and it's going to have to include a lot of rethought offense, that is going out and organizing counter communities. And in fact, it's not just giving them a leaflet. It is in some ways building organizational strength in those communities. I'm sure you agree. Why don't you take the last word?
So I just say quickly to folks that turn your anger and your anguish into a commitment for action. Start with coming out. There'll be probably mass mobilizations across the country on the 14th of January. That's the Saturday of MLK weekend. I'm sure there'll be one in Oregon. Go out of your way to respond to that. We need to send a strong signal before Trump is inaugurated, and we're going to need especially lawyers to defend immigrants. We're going to need all kinds of things, but we have to pick ourselves up and set ourselves on a path of resistance and rebuilding, building on a lot of what we already have. But the first order of business is, for in the work I do, is defend immigrants.
Larry Kleinman, thanks so much for talking
to us
again. It's always really great to talk to you.
Same.